From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now, or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Dear dumb police officers, don't tell a lie. All crimes begin with a lie, as we say in Japan. Don't you know that? Why don't you keep it to yourself? You seem to be at a loss, so why not let us help you? We'll give you a clue. We entered the factory by the front gate. The typewriter we used is Panwriter. The plastic container we used was a piece of street garbage, signed Monster with 21 Faces.
Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. What you just heard was an excerpt from the subject of today's episode, as read by our very own Matt Frederick.
That's me. Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for coming. And my name is Ben, of course. As always, we are here with Noel Fox Eyes Brown.
Ooh,
how about
Fox
that?
Fox Eyes.
Noel the Fox Eyed Brown.
Oh, yes.
He's gesturing at us in what I assume to be the common sign of the fox eyed.
Ooh, and the fox call.
And the fox call. We're not going to ask you to do one.
All right.
That was too far.
Okay.
No, there. Oh, my God.
He did it.
It's true.
Yeah. As an armchair fox expert.
Yeah.
Or foxetologist, the word I just made up. Mm-hmm. So I can verify that if that were actually a fox and were I actually a fox expert. So here is our audio follow-up to an earlier video that we created about unsolved crimes. Previously, we covered the famous Tamam or Taman Shud case, the case of the Somerton Man.
I just want to say, I've always heard it as Taman with an N, Shud.
Mm-hmm.
But then upon our research, we realized, no, it's always been Tamam Shud.
Mm-hmm.
Always. That's what was written on the note.
Yeah. And, it's interesting because, you know, this is something that listeners can help us with perhaps because, as you know, some languages that are non-Romance or non-Latin languages, have some difficulty with, translation,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is why for a long time, there were probably, if you're old enough, you may remember in your lifetime, some names of cities have changed, like Bombay became Mumbai, Peking, Beijing, things like that. So this might be a case of Fitzgerald, the author who did the translation of the Rubaiyat, to which we refer. This may be a case of him using maybe an outdated nomenclature or something
mm-hmm.
like that. Neither you or I speak Farsi, is that? Is that correct?
No. Okay. I mean, it is correct, and no, I do not speak.
Okay. Well, the Somerton case was only one of the cases we mentioned in the video. We also mentioned some bizarre spree killings in Belgium.
Some feet that
yeah.
were showing up all over the place
mm-hmm.
in the Northwest.
Pacific Northwest,
yes.
Yeah. And we also mentioned one other case, one of the most famous unsolved cases in Japanese criminal history. And that is what is known as the Monster with 21 Faces. Matt, what you just read at the top of the show was a quote from an actual letter sent to some police departments.
Kind of taunting.
Mm-hmm.
Very much taunting the police departments.
Yeah, as things were kicking into high gear. So let's go ahead and just start at the beginning. What happened? How did this case begin?
Well, it all begins with this candy company called Glico in Japan. And like all other companies, Glico has a CEO. So their CEO's name was Katsuhisa Izaki. And these two armed masked men broke into Katsuhisa's mother's house
mm-hmm.
and stole a key for his house.
Okay, from his mom. And this
yes.
was in 1984.
1984 is when this happened. They did some pretty heinous things. They bound some people up.
Right. They tied up his wife and one of his children and cut the telephone cords. They raided the bathroom where they found the CEO and his other two kids hiding.
That's right. And then they abducted the CEO and they held him hostage at a warehouse.
Mm-hmm. They issued a ransom as well for 1 billion yen and 100 kilograms of gold bars. That's got to be a tense situation if you're the CEO of the company and you wonder, well, 1 billion yen, 100 kilograms of gold, what's going to happen to me? What's the board going to do?
Is the board going to cut their losses and be like, sorry, well, we can find another CEO?
Right. luckily, he did not have to address that frightening question.
Yes.
He didn't have to get to the ultimate answer because he managed to escape the warehouse 3 days later. However, he was not able to identify any of his abductors, and this was far from over.
Yeah, so these guys had masks on. I'm assuming they wore them the whole time. So, I mean, once you're out and you're trying to figure out who these people are, if you don't have clear motive already beforehand, then how do you know who these guys are? That is a scary, scary situation. So a few weeks later, a couple other things happen. Some vehicles that are in the parking lot at Glico are set on fire. Then there is a container of hydrochloric acid and a letter that accompanied it.
Yeah, and a threatening letter written to Glico itself. They were found in Ibaraki. And let me take a moment here to point out that my Japanese is going to be terrible, my pronunciations. And thank you to everybody in the Somerton case. There were people who wrote in and said, hey, guys, your pronunciation of the Australian stuff, not that bad.
Yeah, we did okay.
Well, we have some really supportive audience.
Yeah,
members.
C plus, B maybe.
So this, so the Japanese is not going to be spot on here. But the warehouse where this guy was originally held hostage, that's the same town that this letter came to. And this was the first in a string of letters from a person or a group of people dubbing itself the monster with 21 faces. Interesting side note here. They didn't make up that name.
No. It's based off of a Japanese detective series, I believe.
Which is fictional.
Yes.
But it's pretty well known in Japan. It's named after the villain in that detective series. These letters claim that Glico candies were laced with potassium cyanide soda, meaning that it would quite possibly kill people who ate it.
Yeah, and if not kill them, make them very, very, very ill. And you can't have that if you're a large company like that. This is not a good idea to allow this product to go out. So Glico, as you might assume, they pulled their stuff off the shelves, but they didn't just pull the possibly contaminated ones. They just pulled everything.
They pulled a lot of stuff, and they were also doing this based entirely on the threat.
Yes,
there was not evidence found at that time, but this was a massive loss for the company, a $21 million loss. And keep in mind, this is in the 80s, and they had to lay off almost 500 employees because of this expense.
And that's a $21 million U.S. loss.
Right. Yeah, not yen. And after months of tormenting Glico, the monster with 21 faces forgives them, says, we forgive Glico. And that was their final letter, but they weren't done yet.
But it's crazy. I guess they caused enough damage. I'm trying to put my head in the mind of the monster with 21 faces. Just, I guess they saw that the company had been defeated in a way, at least according to their standards. So they're like, you know what? It's okay, guys. We're cool. So they moved on, and they turned their sights on a couple other companies who produce food. Marudai Ham, House Foods Corporation, and Fujiya.
Right, yeah. And this was straight up extortion, pretty much.
Yes.
Right? And at the time in Japan, it's important to note that this was a campaign of overt terror. You know, people were, some for the first time, were terrified about the possibility of crime because Japan, in comparison to a lot of other countries, is a very safe place. You know, this is not the place where you would think you would accidentally die because you ate, you bought some Pocky, which is,
yes,
by the way, my favorite thing that Glico makes. You know what I'm talking about?
The little,
yeah.
They have flavorings on one end. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't get the strawberry. I'm not a fan of the strawberry.
I haven't had that one.
And I have no illusions about the nutritional value or lack thereof, but man, that chocolate sauce stuff is on point. Anyway, so they told Marudai that they would stop harassing this company if one of their employees gave them ransom money, 50 million yen specifically on a train. So the police forces have an investigator disguise himself as an employee. And while he's disguised as an employee, they don't see the place where they're instructed to hand off the money, because they're supposed to like throw it from a train kind of. But they do see a guy who later becomes the prime suspect as a representative of the monster with 21 faces. And that is the so-called fox-eyed man, which goes back to your nickname today, Noel.
It does.
The man was well built. He had short hair and it was permed. And he was...
This is the 80s.
And he was described as having eyes like those of a fox. So after this police officer, investigator, dresses employee, drops the ransom, he and this other guy try to follow the fox-eyed man, but they lose him. And then they get another close chance to catch him again, but he evades them again. He's pretty good at it.
It feels so cinematic to me. It feels like this is a script that was written. But no, ladies and gentlemen, this happened.
Yeah. And after this event and during these close calls, the monster is mailing more harassing letters toward the police. And a year later, after a year of unsuccessfully investigating this, finding no leads, catching no criminals, the police superintendent, a fellow named Yamamoto, commits suicide because of this case. And he does it by setting himself on fire, allegedly because he's ashamed of his failure to capture the fox-eyed man. So 5 days after the death, a little less than a week, the monster with 21 faces sends a final letter to the media. Matt, do you want to do the honors?
Sure. Yamamoto of Shiga Prefecture Police died. How stupid of him. We've got no friends or secret hiding place in Shiga. It's Yoshino or Shikata who should have died. What have they been doing for as long as 1 year and 5 months? Don't let bad guys like us get away with it. There are many more fools who want to copy us. No career Yamamoto died like a man, so we decided to give our condolence. We decided to forget about torturing food-making companies. If anyone blackmails any of the food-making companies, it's not us, but someone copying us. We are bad guys. That means we've got more to do other than bullying companies. It's fun to lead a bad man's life. Monster with 21 faces.
And with that, the monster with 21 faces did not surface again, or at least hasn't been seen to surface. So this crime, this series of crimes, remains unsolved 17 months from the initial kidnapping to the last known letter, which you heard part of there. And this was an historical hinge, you know, this turned the public perception of a crime-free and safe Japan. And it leaves us with a lot of questions. One thing that people would say is that the suspects would most likely be Yakuza, you know, the organized crime rings of Japan.
It certainly seems like there was a lot of organization going on, coordinating where to be and when, and knowing information about their victims.
And in June 1995, the statute of limitations ran out for the kidnapping and assault. And then in 2000, the limitations for the poisoned food products also expired. So what's interesting is the fox-eyed man, as well as some other unidentified guy in a hat, were seen different times during the 17 months. The guy in the hat was actually seen putting food onto a shelf.
Oh, wow.
So actually participating in the poison, right? So after the release of the identikit, to try to find the perpetrator in 1985, the Tokyo Metropolitan Police believed the culprit was a guy named Manabu Miyazaki, or Mr. M, which is kind of a cool name. It's because he had in 1976 released a tape about supporting a union that was in a labor dispute with Glico way back in 76. And it said, and according to the police, this had a lot of similarities to the tone of letters sent by Monster with 21 Faces.
That clearly could be motive, right?
Could be motive. And in 76 and 75, there were whistleblowing incidents that were also attributed to the guy talking about Glico's dumping of industrial waste into rivers.
Wow.
So he was also suspect of a couple other things. But here's the thing. His father was the boss of a local Yakuza organization.
Whoa.
And the guy himself apparently bore resemblance to the Fox-Eyed Man, which one of our listeners on YouTube said that was just sort of a phrase for someone with crazy eyes.
Gotcha.
But I don't know. Again, not a foxologist. Is there a foxologist in the house? I just always wanted to say that.
There's a sketch of him you can find online. And yes. The way they depicted his eyes, I can see what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. And there, in 2000 or so, there were rumors that there was actually North Korean involvement.
Oh, wow.
And there were, that's not as readily accepted as the accusations of organized crime in general, or should I say domestically organized crime. But we have to ask ourselves, will this case ever be solved? Will it be like a deathbed confession? What were the long-term results? What was the ultimate motivation behind this? Was the group doing this profiting in some other way by damaging the reputation of Glico?
Yeah, were they maybe competitors somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a decent question, because what we're really looking for here now is motive.
Yes.
That's the strange part. There's not really an explanation of motive, at least in the letters themselves, other than we are bad guys and it's fun to lead that kind of life.
What if it was an early take on the health food movement where they were trying to punish companies who make delicious sticks with candy on them?
Yeah, but again, stay away from the strawberry. That's an interesting angle too, but the problem is with that there's not very much in the way of proof. That's just conjecture.
Well, and if, let's say that they were successful and they got the ransom money.
Mm-hmm.
When you're getting ransom money like that, even in the 80s, it's going to be trackable in some way. Bill is going to have numbers on it that you can trace.
Sure. Yeah.
You would need somebody, like an organized crime to wash that money, funnel it through different things.
And sure. Then, different gambling things or pachinko parlors, things like that, which,
that would make sense.
But that's, just connecting, between gambling and those sympathizers. That isn't in any way to say that there is proof that any North Korean sympathizers were behind the Monster with 21 Faces. But then again, there's not too much solid proof that the Yakuza is – it's just sort of like they're the party because that's a crime family.
Yep.
And this was clearly organized, well thought out. The methods of contact and delivery for the time did show that this was not anyone's first rodeo. You know what I mean?
That's right.
So – what this leaves us with is another point that we should make, which is a lot of the contemporary reporting of this, the stuff that was happening in the 80s at the time, was, of course, written in Japanese and remains in Japanese. So now I'd like to put out a request for those of you listening with knowledge of Japanese. Is there an additional piece of this story that you think is missing for people who primarily speak English? And if so, what? Because we'd like to hear it.
That would be so great. Perhaps we could even put a little addendum at the end of another episode where we discuss something that you written to us. That would be great.
That would be a great follow-up. And we could also look at it on our new live show. We're on Periscope, usually around 4 p.m., I guess Thursdays or Fridays, right?
Sometime near the end of the week.
Uh-huh. And we do hope you tune in and check that out. We hope you're enjoying looking at some of these crimes. These are just sort of 101 instances.
Yeah, it's to send you down the rabbit hole.
Right. Yes.
Or the foxhole or whatever.
Right. I was going to say candy hole, but for some reason that sounds strangely dirty.
It's just your face.
Oh, because people eat candy.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was like a personal insult. And I thought, Matt, jeez, man, no, we're on air.
No.
Sorry. What have I done?
Jeez.
So we're going to go ahead and end that. Oh, wait, do you hear that?
It was the fox call.
Scream!
He's back.
Oh, it's Noel.
Oh, man.
I don't know if that's really what a fox sounds like. I heard they kind of shriek.
You know, it's interesting. There's a domestication project that went on with foxes that you've probably heard about, right? I believe it was a Russian project, and the idea was to see what would happen when they bred foxes increasingly for domestic purposes, turning them into pets, because very few animals are actually domesticated. Mm-hmm. You can tame individuals, but domestication is when the entire type of animal is just ready to hang with people. So what they found was that the foxes got floppy ears and retained some juvenile characteristics, and they do make that crazy, unholy sounding noise. Yeah. So you nailed it.
I thought I wasn't too far off base. So you were talking about Pocky, right? Pocky?
Yeah.
What about Yan Yan? Have you ever had Yan Yan?
I have had Yan Yan.
I have not. What is Yan Yan?
It's like little dipping sticks, you know?
It's like Pocky.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
It's like I'll tell you, it's one of those things that whenever I'm at a place and they sell it, I have this moment where
it's like Dunkaroos.
Dunkaroos.
Oh.
Whoa, deep cut. No,
okay.
Whenever I'm in a place where they sell that stuff, I buy a couple just to have on board on hand. I don't really eat sweets, but it must have been a nostalgic thing for me or something.
It's a fun thing to offer to guests too.
Oh yeah, they have them at the place where I get my banh mi's. Right around the corner from my house. Lee's. They've got the Pocky. I don't know.
Do you go to Lee's?
Yeah, it's Lee's Bakery.
Oh, man. Okay, so if you're ever in Atlanta and you like banh mi,
Sandwiches.
Or just sandwiches. Or just sandwiches.
It's sort of the perfect sandwich.
Yeah, you gotta check out Lee's because.
And it's so cheap.
Yeah, I'm as a cheapskate, their deal really appeals to me. You could get six sandwiches for the price of five, which granted is entirely too many sandwiches for one person.
This episode brought to you by Lee's Bakery.
Oh, no.
No, I'm just joking.
I would love it. If they were sponsoring our show, then I would ask just for payment in sandwiches.
Oh, please.
It's really that good.
I once did the six sandwich deal and I just put them in the fridge and brought one to work every day. And it was the best week of my life, man.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I don't know why I haven't done that again.
I remember that week. That was a high point for all of us.
you're just smiling all the time.
Yeah. What do you think about this? Do you think they're ever going to find the perpetrator of the perpetrators?
I don't know. It's sometimes, you know, these things just don't ever get solved, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it's also strange because we know that some organized crime families have, especially in this country, some organized crime families have pretty close links with police departments and law enforcement, you know? So it follows then that it is entirely possible for members of the police department and members of perhaps even the Japanese media to know exactly who this is, but for one reason or another to have participated in a cover up. And, I'm interested in this because I want to know what happened with this. You know, I want to know where it occurred. And you know, this wasn't that long ago, relatively speaking, especially in comparison to the Somerton Man. So it's quite possible that people who participated in this are still alive.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'm most certain because this isn't just a one or two person deal. I don't think it's possible that this is one person, two person deal.
I mean, I don't know how it is today, but it seems like there was certainly a time where the Yakuza wielded almost more control and power than the police force itself. And I mean, it was probably, you know, the police force was more beholden to the Yakuza than the other way around.
See, I feel like we learn about that in hindsight, mm-hmm. and we're in this forever loop of control getting larger and larger mm-hmm. with organized crime within our institutions, but we just learn about it.
I don't know. It seems to me, at least in the States, maybe this is completely not true, but it seems there's a sense that organized crime isn't, you know, what it once was.
Right. Has it devolved? But then also it reminds me of the old question of or the old idea that organized crime is always going to be around. The question will be who perpetrates the most, and you'll have people like, you know, Gary Webb, the journalist, clearly said, guys, the CIA is participating in organized crime and with much more success than the Gambinos or whatever.
Yeah.
And perhaps we are arriving at a place where the differences between some factions of law enforcement and some factions of criminal empires are not as distinct as they once were. So yeah, to your point, man, it does make sense that the quote-unquote traditional organized crime could be falling off. But crime, like any other thing in nature, abhors a vacuum, so somebody else is going to step in.
It's true.
Are you are you guys a fan of crime shows, mob stuff?
Yeah. I was actually just going to ask Matt how you felt about the True Detective finale. I thought
spoilers. Don't ask me that.
Just tell me. Just out with it.
Did you watch it?
Get it off your chest. Yeah, I did.
Okay. All right. Really fast.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can sit and judge something like that by just saying, oh, it was awful.
No, that means you hated it.
No, that's not what that means.
Okay.
It means – I think that there is deeper meaning to be read from my first viewing of the season. I think that it wasn't shown as much on the surface as season one was, where you had a character like Rust Cole who was kind of explaining to you what the symbols mean, what the deeper – thing that you can find within maybe these symbols or within this. I think it exists there, and that for that I'm very happy. However, I think I really personally think it suffered from having too many characters trying to tell too many stories and not being able to focus its energy onto one or two things.
It was just weird for me because it almost felt like by the time it found its footing, it was like too late, kind of.
Yeah.
Because I mean, the last two episodes, three episodes even to me, were pretty solid, and I almost like, I was hate watching it up to that point. I'm not kidding. Like, I was just, you know.
Hate watching?
Yeah, I really was. I was just like, this dialogue is awful. These characters don't make sense. The casting is just lopsided and bizarre.
Ouch.
But then by the end, it was like, oh, wow, okay, there's really some stuff coming home to roost here, and like, there's actually some really interesting development, and some of the things that at the time seemed ridiculous for these characters to do actually sort of make sense in the grand picture of the thing. So I would argue that maybe it's worth watching, like binge watching, you know, like
sure.
So you kind of get a sense of who the characters are and you don't forget. Because it's like one thing that I had a problem with is like there would be characters that you maybe saw once or twice and they maybe were named once or twice and then you don't ever see them again until they pop up and, oh, they're actually really, really important. But who's that again? You know, that kind of thing.
Oh, I see.
Anyway, I don't want to get too overboard with it. I just wanted to do a little post.
Well, no, because I actually wanted to talk about it. Ben and I discussed it briefly. And I'm sorry, Ben. I don't mean to just talk here. But I really feel like I had pacing problems and too many characters. You're right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, give it a chance. If you have not watched it yet, give it a chance.
It's a good conversation starter, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Just like season one, my favorite parts of watching season one was in coming to work and then discussing with everybody what we think is happening or what's going on.
Oh, I loved the season one and for an entirely selfish reason, because I did think it was a great show and the time he spent on it shows. But I loved it because suddenly people cared about the book, The King in Yellow.
I know.
Other stories. And
I'd never heard of it.
Well, I had only heard of it because it has, you know, it has this Lovecraftian air and it got sucked into that whole mythos. And Josh might still have my copy, or did I just get another copy? But the book itself has some pretty neat stuff. It's an anthology. It's hit and miss,
okay,
for sure. It has virtually nothing to do with the stuff in True Detective. Thematically, it makes sense because the Yellow King is in that book a figure of, like, there's this three-act play. That's what, and the three-act play occurs in these different stories. And the idea is that when you read the first act, it's great, it's interesting.
It pulls you in, right?
It's the honeypot. It pulls you in, second act, blah, blah, blah. By the time you get to the third act, you are insane and your brain is driven to the darkness beyond the stars, to Carcosa, where the Yellow King dwells, and that kind of stuff. And, That's not really what True Detective is about at all, but it is an interesting thematic underpinning. And unlike the Monster with 21 Faces, the True Detective case was solved.
Yes. Some people
sort of.
Well, yes.
It was a Pyrrhic victory.
Yes. And we don't want to give too much away here. We want you guys all to be excited about watching these shows because, honestly, when there's good television or a good story put on camera, just makes us all happy, I think.
Yeah, there's a renaissance, I believe, for TV shows. But also, I defer to you guys' opinion on this because you're both far more knowledgeable about film in general than I am. I'll have conversations with these guys, ladies and gentlemen, where if a bunch of movies come out at once, and I will walk up to Matt or Noel or some of our other coworkers and ask them which one I'm supposed to watch. Because they just I have time to wade through all of them, you know.
Should we go ahead and talk about The Gift now? Or?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, let us never speak of that horrible, horrible film. Other than to say, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to help you. We are going to save 2 hours of your life. Don't see that film.
Oh, man.
I hate to be so blunt about it. Well, you know what? Maybe you'll like it. It takes all types.
I haven't seen it. I hear great things, though.
I bet you too. All right, so before I give myself too much trouble or go on another rant, we are going to head out. Reminder, please do let us know what you think about The Monster with 21 Faces. Will this ever be solved? And please let us know what other unsolved crimes exist in your neck of the woods, on your part of the globe. You can write to us directly. We're Facebook and Twitter, Conspiracy Stuff. You can also check out our podcast on your choice of streaming device or iTuning.
You can iTune it.
You can iTune it, if that's a verb. I don't know.
We're like old school iTuners.
Yeah, we've been around for a while on that one. Not as long as some, but we put in some time. And we have new episodes coming out every week. We also have, as you mentioned, the live show. But hey, Matt, Ben, Noel, you might be saying, I do have some feedback, but I don't feel comfortable posting it on a public forum like Facebook or YouTube or Twitter. We totally understand, but we'd still love to hear from you. Write to us directly at
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this topic and other unexplained phenomena, visit youtube.com/conspiracystuff. You can also get in touch on Twitter at the handle @conspiracystuff.